You'll have to forgive me. We went to a hockey game last night and I screamed so much that I rubbed my whole throat raw.
Oh,
So,
so good.
so grateful. It's
Especially
not
since all of those
my
like recording things that you've been doing recently.
asthma. I really was very irresponsible.
Ugh. As a paid voice actor, you should not be this irresponsible.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are
Mediocre
Content. And I apologize for sounding so crispy.
It's kind of nice. It's very like ASMR.
Oh, thank you. I did not protect my voice, and I screamed too loud at a hockey game, and sometimes that's what happens. And here we are.
And that's life, everyone.
That's just life. If it makes anybody feel any better, there were so many fist fights. A guy left the ice bleeding, and both teams got into a giant fist fight. And I say that's a pretty good game.
I think most hockey fans would agree.
We did lose though. The one caveat.
That's okay. So that's the thing about hockey, though. It's like you go through all that and then you lose. Like,
Yeah,
that's crazy.
you know, sometimes when you're losing, you just gotta punch the other guy in the face, I guess. I don't know how it works.
Do you think hockey players get into hockey for the fights? Do you think they secretly like want to be MMA fighters, but they were like, no, but this is better?
I would be disappointed if the answer was no, if I'm
Yeah.
being perfectly honest with you. There was this one fight where one of the guys from the other team slammed one of our team members so hard against, like, they get slammed against the wall. This guy got like ejected into the wall and he went down, like just down, you know? And the other guy skated off in his little hee hee ha ha moment. And of course the ref is like, you okay, whatever. And the guy gets up, skates over to the guy that like beat him against the wall, and it took two upper jabs and that guy was seeing 2,000 stars. Just like drops it.
Permanent brain damage.
It's totally acceptable.
We love it.
Oh, just a little bit of violence to round out your Saturday.
That's right.
Anyway,
did you see that Jake Paul is fighting Mike Tyson?
No. Every time I hear Mike Tyson, I think of Tyson chicken nuggets, which is not the same thing.
So do I, though. But no, he's the guy with the face tattoo.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure Tyler would watch it. He likes to subscribe to those fights.
Yeah.
Every now and then. Not all of them, but some. The one with McGregor.
I mean,
is that his name?
So from what I gathered through the TikTok algorithm that it has served me against my will, apparently Jake Paul gets all of these advantages so that he doesn't die.
Just minimal.
Like he can use, like, he's not going to be drug tested before this. So he's not going to be weighed in.
Oh.
To wear headgear to like protect his head. And he gets to tag in his brother, I guess, in the event that he like needs him. And then Mike Tyson gets to do all the regular like protocol or whatever.
Who is Jake Paul?
He's a YouTuber who's super annoying.
Does he have a podcast? He's that podcast
No.
guy.
Oh yeah, he does have a podcast, but he also did like, he was like early, I would say like 2016 YouTube, where he like had the hype house and like all that other garbage. I don't know.
Sounds terrible.
He is really.
That's great.
Yeah.
Son, sorry. Also, I'm trying to keep track of the sheet that we, our cheat sheet, our trusty cheat sheet. Lynx is literally trying to lay on my keyboard, which is normally a Jinx job. Lynx is filling in.
He's taking over the role. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He has literally opened Streamlabs just now.
Oh, good. So he wants to stream?
Bro, this is not the time. That's on Thursday. Yeah. Okay. Now he's eating my hand. Okay. All right. Well, would you like to disclaim?
Yeah. We'll disclaim. So we are not experts on anything. If you have come to this podcast to get any kind of advice or, you know, information for your paper or anything like that, We are not the place to get that info. We are only semi-reliable. Who knows? Maybe they have like a research paper on snails they need for their term.
They might.
Whatever. I don't know.
It's, you know.
But we are the place to learn about things that you wouldn't normally come across. And we encourage you guys to do your own research, follow up with us, tell us if we got something wrong or you had like a fun experience or something that pertains to this. Links, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He's scooting all the papers off my desk. This is so annoying. He's sitting on the papers now.
So upset.
He has arranged them to sit on them. Despite the fact, I will have you guys know, I have like a 20,000 foot wide desk that this freaking cat can sit on, and he's going to rearrange my papers to sit right next to my keyboard.
That's nice.
Oh, he's so comfy now.
He wanted to make sure that he was comfortable.
Oh my gosh. Well.
So anyway, let's jump into the good news before Lynx decides to get up and rearrange some more papers.
Please. All right. So bear with me. Might have to cough in between. I apologize. So the first bit of good news that I have inspired me because of the 3D episode that you did, 3D printing.
Oh, stuff. Cool. Okay.
So it's titled, Scientists Have 3D Scanned Thousands of Creatures, Creating Incredibly Intricate Images Anyone Can Access For Free. For free.
For free.
An incredible new project has scanned thousands of creatures to advance scientific research and provide colorful images to the world. And I highly recommend, just a little caveat here, we always have the links for all of our resources in the description. Please, please, please go find this one because the images are so cool and very fun. They are so colorful. Natural history museums have entered a new stage of scientific discovery and accessibility with the completion of what's called Open Vertebrate or OVERT, which is a 5-year collaboration project among 18 institutions to create 3D reconstructions of vertebrate specimens and make them freely available online. Researchers have published a summary of the project in the journal Bioscience, reviewing the specimens they've scanned to date, offering a glimpse of how the data might be used to ask new questions and spur the development of innovative technology. Such museums got their start in the 16th century, which is freaking crazy, as cabinets of curiosity. And this is when a few wealthy individuals amassed rare and exotic specimens, which they obviously kept to themselves because why would they give them away?
Sorry, I just had so cabinets of curiosity sparked a childhood memory.
Oh,
did you ever play Webkinz?
No,
you never played Webkinz?
No.
Oh my god. Okay, so for the listener, there used to be these little stuffed animals that you could buy. And then they had like a code where you would go on the Webkinz website and type in your code and you would activate your stuffed animal online. And it came with like a bunch of games and stuff. So you would like go and you could go to the curio shop, which I realize is actually like the curiosity, because that's where you got like all of you. He literally had like a cabinet with like all of these little gems and like fancy little things in
there.
That is
fun.
So anyway, that I don't know why that triggered that memory for me, but that's where we're at.
Super fun.
Yeah.
At the same time, this is also a cabinet of animals, technically. So I guess it kind of, Webkinz, weren't they kind of animals?
They were. Yeah.
So there you go. It was kind of the same thing, except feel like the Webkinz are probably alive, maybe. I don't know. But since then, museums have become a resource to the public to learn about biodiversity, but the majority of museums' collections were still behind closed doors and only accessible to scientists who must either travel to see them or ask that a small number of specimens be mailed or on loan, and OVERT wants to change that. Beginning in 2017, the OVERT team members took CT scans of more than 13,000 species with vertebrate species across the tree of life, including over half the genera of all amphibians, reptiles, fishes, and mammals. CT scanners use high-energy X-rays to peer past an organism's exterior and, of course, view the dense bone structures underneath. If you've ever had a CT scan, you might already know that. Some specimens were also stained, which is why they're colorful, with a contrast-enhancing solution for visualizing soft tissues like skin, muscle, and other organs. The models give an intimate look at the internal portions of a specimen that could previously only be observed through destructive dissection and sample or tissue sampling, which is not good. Let's say you have like an exotic species and you only have one of that thing. You don't want to rip that thing apart and then never have access to it again.
Right.
So this eliminates the need for that because you just scan it instead of dissecting it, which also takes me back to high school biology class and college, actually.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Skeletons too large to fit into a CT scanner, such as a humpback whale. That would be kind of big to fit into a CT scanner.
Humpback whale!
I think of that all the time. You get a humpback whale. You get a humpback whale. Freaking Oprah, man. Were painstakingly taken apart so that 3D models of each individual bone could be scanned and then reassembled, which I feel like that is such a massive job. You know?
Agreed. Like, agreed.
Literally and figuratively. A set of iconic Galapagos tortoises at the California Academy of Sciences were each photographed in a 360-degree rotation. Photographing their undersides was problematic as their curved shells made it impossible to keep them upright, which is kind of funny. After a few trial and error runs, they settled on placing the specimens on top of an inflatable swimming tubes, which is great. So they could just sit there.
Yeah.
Scientists have already used data from the project to gain astonishing insights into the natural world. In 2023, Edward Stanley was conducting routine CT scans of spiny mice and was surprised to find their tails were covered with an internal coat of bony plates. It's called osteoderms. And before that, armadillos were considered to be the only living mammals with that particular structure. Hmm. So it's exciting because you, number one, don't have to destroy samples that you own. Number two, scientists from all over now have access to all of these scans and can come up with their own theories and hypotheses and comparisons without tampering with anything or something getting lost. And then, you know, discovery is great. So even though discovering that, you know, the spiny mice has a similar tail to an armadillo might not be useful to you in this moment, there's nothing that says that it isn't predictive for something else or useful somewhere else, which is all the fun of science, is figuring out those links, and this makes it easier. And it's pretty. So.
Yeah.
There's also that.
I just, like, so I've seen a CT scanner because I've taken patients to CT and things like that in my career. And the idea of putting, like, a dead animal on the CT table and then just watching it go through is just funny. I don't know why.
Through the donut you go. Can you imagine just slapping a tuna on that thing?
I
whipping it through.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, and here we go, everyone.
Also, they're super expensive.
Right.
So CT scanners are no joke.
So are all the animal scientists just like using one collective CT scanner, or are we?
I think it's coming from like one, if I read this correctly, it might be coming from like one museum at the moment.
Ah, okay.
But maybe, I mean, the other possibility is that scientists from other places that have samples could always just send them in and house them there and get them scanned and stuff, like, you know, you never know.
It's true. Because I got to take my dead animals to the hospital just so I can use the CT scanner when they're not using it. Seems a little extreme.
I know you're busy, but I need to make an appointment for my dead fish, Nemo.
I know this guy is like having a stroke right now, but like I really need to get this antelope carcass examined.
It's honestly super important for science, you know, for science.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, I don't think that's how they do it.
It's just funny to like think about.
Next. Can you imagine? This is really bad. I feel like I'm going down a morbid path. So I apologize. Can you imagine? You've just come out of surgery, you're recovering, and you're sitting there eating your Jello or your pudding, and in wheels, like this bed that they're putting next to you, and it's just a dead fish. Like, yep, just bringing Jim Bob in.
And like, I imagine the doctors getting like really pissed off that the CT scanner is like being used by these scientists, and the scientists are like, well, I'm also a doctor and you're a doctor, so really we're on the same level here. And the actual medical doctors being like, well, these people are still alive, and just like losing their minds.
It's just like so funny. Obviously that is not what's happening. I just want to be 1,000% clear, that is not what's happening. We are not clogging the CT scans with scientific specimens.
That was just a fun like thought experiment for me and Kirsten. That was really for us. That was
I'm
not,
here for it.
Fine. Yeah.
Just, you know, it was casual. Oh, can you imagine? First of all, disgusting, because we have both smelled formaldehyde, and that sniff, that is rank. Okay.
Yeah, it's not good.
Oh, whatever, what is it? The, Zofran they give you would not help. No. After smelling that,
you would need a mask with like Vicks Vapor Rub, like coated.
Absolutely. Yeah. Disgusting. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the good news is we're gonna stay scientific and dive into medical for the next one.
Great.
It's kind of convenient. So we've actually talked about something like this previously. We've talked about CAR T cell therapy in other good news for other episodes. I don't know that this one was specific. I know that the last one that we did, I think, was kind of still in research phase, but now we have something that has just come out of clinical trials and it freaking worked. So this is great. So CAR T cell therapy achieves near complete tumor regression in brain cancer after 5 days. First of all, timeline, amazing.
Wow.
Clinical trials for a novel treatment for patients with glioblastoma, which is a deadly form of brain cancer, have shown rapid success, with some patients experiencing a dramatic decline in tumor size just days after their first treatment course. Researchers from the Mass General Cancer Center, which is in Massachusetts in the States, have shared the results for the first time, or for the first 3 patients in a clinical trial of CAR T cell therapy. CAR T cell therapy, or CAR T for short, won the Nobel Prize in medicine and works by using a patient's own immune cells to fight the cancer. It's currently the most personalized way to treat the disease. A patient's cells are extracted, modified to produce proteins on their surface, and then injected back into the body to target the tumor directly. CAR T therapies have been approved for the treatment of blood cancers as well, but the therapy's use for solid tumors is limited. The trial known as INCIPIENT was designed to evaluate the safety of CAR-V3 team ET cells, which is a mouthful, in patients with recurrent glioblastoma, which is the most common form of brain cancer in adults. Combining 2 separate treatment strategies, CAR T and bispecific antibodies, known as T cells engaging antibody molecules, or TEAMs, the approach showed promise in preclinical models of glioblastoma. So, as they said at the beginning, there were 3 patients that were enrolled in the study, and this was between March 2023 and July 2023. The patients' T cells were collected and transformed into the new version, which is the one we just talked about, infused back into the patient. The mild symptoms that they received for the transfer were fevers and kind of like altered mental status soon after infusion. They did not elaborate what that is, but whatever it is, it was tolerated and minimal. So that's great also for the patient. And then just days after a single treatment, patients experienced dramatic reductions in the tumor size, with one patient achieving near complete regression in just 5 days. One of the patients was a 72-year-old man, and he saw a 60.7% decrease in his tumor, which was sustained for 6 months. There was a 57-year-old woman who had the almost complete regression, And then the team says that their results are exciting, but of course, as all scientists say at the end of every article, more research is needed to fine tune the treatment. So it's,
yeah,
it's going in the right direction. They seem to be having some success with mild effects on the patient. Any cancer is deadly for sure, but you know, brain cancer and bone cancer and blood cancer, I mean, those are really aggressive. So it's nice to know that there are some potential treatments for those.
Yeah. My question as just like, because obviously like this is kind of vague, which yeah. I mean, rightfully so, because there's still some stuff they need to work out.
Yeah.
So the fevers and altered mental status, I am curious as if shrinking the tumor that quickly, mm-hmm. like maybe, or if the treatment itself caused mm-hmm. the altered mental status, and if the regular mental status had resumed mm-hmm. after the treatment was over, or like, because that's kind of like, yes, the tumor shrunk. but like quality of life wise, what are we working with here? You know?
Yeah. And also the question, like, because it's in the brain already, would any treatment create something similar? Because it thinks it's fighting an infection. So for me, that's probably the fever. I feel like that's usually why you get a fever, nurse. I don't know. Feel free to speak on that.
Yes, but the thing, I think with cancer treatment, though, I guess, yeah, because it's basically making more attack cells than your body currently has. So it mm-hmm. is revving up your immune system. So mm-hmm. that would make sense. It's not technically, because like a tumor is not an infection. It's just a cell that's decided that it does, the rules don't apply.
Which is so rude, first of all.
It's, right, and it's just going to get too big. Right. So yeah, I don't, the fever I'm less concerned about, I guess, because there's ways you can treat that, I think.
Also, I wonder if they accounted for pre-existing, because no, I'm not trying to say that like once you get to a certain age, you like have, altered mental states necessarily, nor would I even know how to define that. But one of the patients was 72 that they cited. So I wonder if you have altered mental states, if you have something pre-existing, or if it literally is a side effect of the treatment.
Right. Or like if the tumor was causing it before. Right.
And it was just kind of exacerbated.
Yeah.
Yeah. For anyone who's left the pod at this point, so sorry. This is what scientists do.
We're a mess. Oh my God. All right.
You know, but anyway.
I'm going to move this right along.
Go for it. Because I feel like snails are necessary now.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about snails. I've never tried eating snails before. So that's not what we're talking about today. As the title would suggest. Thank you, Kirsten.
You're welcome. And the description.
So we're only going to talk about land snails, because category of sea snails just like opens us up to a whole other thing. And so we're just talking about land snails. And the inspiration behind this episode is my husband and I were on a walk and in our neighborhood, and there were snails crossing the concrete, you know, mm-hmm. and
crossing the concrete.
I was like, I wonder how snails get their shells, because I know I've had hermit crabs before and they mm-hmm. just like take on whatever shell is available that fits them. And mm-hmm. that's that. Mm-hmm. And my husband was like, I don't know. And I was like, well, I'm going to find out. And here we are. So that's where we're at right now.
Oh, that's great. Got to be careful not to step on them. I forget where we were. I think it was Sweetbriar actually that had all the snails on the steps. They were yellow. They had yellow shells anyway, and I was always so afraid, but you would see them just crunched everywhere. It's so sad.
I accidentally crunched on one the other day, and Blair! I felt so bad.
You should be so sad.
I am a snail murderer. I'm so sorry.
No.
I didn't mean to. Okay. And the weird part was, it's like, so we walk in like a loop, and so on our way back, where I crunched the snail by accident.
Murdered him.
Yeah. there were a bunch of other snails like around
they were,
it.
Yes, because like, they were mourning.
Oh my God.
They were trying.
I angered the snail community.
They were in mourning.
They're coming they were... to get me at a reasonable pace.
Peter, no. Who did this to you? And then you just come marching along.
Oh my God.
You should, you know, you should have just rounded it out and stepped on the clan and just
put them all out
of their misery.
There was not no unnecessary snail death. Okay, it was an accident. It will be an accident, and that's what it is. Okay,
oh my goodness.
Okay, all right. So land snails are mollusks found on all continents, and they occur virtually everywhere in Eastern North America, where there are more than 500 native species. Hmm. Okay. We're not going to talk about all of them today because then we'd be here for like 3 hours and I don't want to do that. They live primarily in the upper leaf litter of forests. So like the leaves on the ground, old fields and wetlands, but also in more disturbed habitats such as active gardens and fields, riverbanks, suburbs, and even cities. The term land snail includes snails and slugs, which and slugs have no obvious shell.
No obvious shell?
Yeah.
Was that a hint that they have a secret shell?
Okay. No, they have no shell.
They have no obvious.
Don't have a no. Stop it.
Sorry.
This is not, they don't have a shell. Snails have a shell. Slugs don't have a shell. Okay. Mm. All right. They're both slimy. All right. They feed upon a wide variety of organic material, mainly green or dead herbaceous plants, rotting wood and fungi, bark and algae. But they also consume empty snail shells because calcium. Mm. And we'll get to that later, how calcium is really important to them. So they'll eat like empty, not with snails living in it. But if there's like an abandoned one, they'll eat it. They'll also eat sap, animal droppings, and carcasses, and even limestone, rock, or cement, again, because they need calcium. Carnivorous snails, which we'll get to, attack nematodes and other snails. And I did a little deep dive on nematodes because all I can think about is SpongeBob when you say nematodes.
Nematodes.
So just so we're all fully aware, a nematode is any worm of the phylum Nematoda. Nematodes are among the most abundant animals on Earth, and they occur as parasites in animals and plants or as free-living forms in soil, freshwater, marine environments, and even unusual places such as vinegar, beer malts, and water-filled cracks deep within the Earth's crust. Yuck.
Ew. Wait, what?
The number of named species is about 20,000, but it is probable that only a small proportion of the free living forms have been identified. A great deal of research has been conducted on the parasitic forms because most of them have medical, veterinary, or economic importance, right? They are bilaterally symmetrical, elongate, and usually tapered at both ends. Some species, such as the pseudocoel, have a fluid-filled body cavity between the digestive tract and the body wall. So basically, a tapeworm, I feel like, would count as like a nematode.
Right?
Yeah. A lot like the heartworms and things like that like dogs get would be nematode. So just so everybody's aware.
And the good news out of that is those carnivorous snails will eat them, which is fantastic news.
And snails are very important for the breakdown of like things like leaves in the fall and in the winter time, you know, when they're on the ground. And
what do they call the species? They're like, it's like the bacteria and the fungi that do that.
Oh, yeah.
What do they call it? I forget.
Not extremophiles. I don't know.
No, extremophiles. I know.
I don't know.
I'll think of it.
I don't know. But they're really good at decomposing stuff, is what I'm trying to say.
Decomposers.
Yes.
the word I was looking
for. Is that what you were looking for? Oh, good. Okay, great.
That's literally the one I was looking for. Oh, the hockey. You know what? I probably got hit with a puck last night.
She has brain damage, y'all. Just for today, though.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're probably just tired.
We were out until like, I think we went to bed at like 1.
She was out past her bedtime.
I was. My 8 a.m. 8 a.m. Oh my God, 8 p.m.
Okay,
just keep going. Just go.
Land snails, in turn, are eaten by a variety of invertebrates and vertebrate predators. Predators include invertebrates such as parasitic mites, nematodes. So nematodes eat them back, apparently. Oh. And flies, beetle larvae, beetles, and millipedes, and other snails.
Oh.
Chirine beetles have specialized bodies for preying upon land snails. Fireflies are a well-known insect whose larvae consume snails.
Ew.
It's disgusting, I know. Vertebrate predators of snails and slugs include, I would say amphibian is probably a better term than what they have here. So amphibians such as salamanders and turtles, shrews, mice, and other small mammals, birds, especially ground foragers such as grouse and turkey.
This makes sense to me. That makes more sense than the fireflies.
I agree. So this also led me to a side tangent of how do snails get their shells? And this is where the calcium really comes in. So it's not like hermit crabs, plot twist. They do not just acquire a shell out of whatever they can find.
Nice.
Snails have shells that are attached to them. So they are if you take off their shell, they die. So it is ingrained into their body.
Wait.
What's wrong?
Never mind. Keep going.
Okay. All right. So snails hatch from eggs. Generally, the parents lay those eggs in loose soil or affix them to rocks. and some snail species, their eggs hatch inside the mother's body and then she like births them out.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But for our intensive purposes, they are in eggs in the soil. Okay.
Great. Yeah.
It's during gestation period that a snail's shell begins to form. The mantle is a crucial organ possessed by mollusks. So like some, like oysters also do this. Mm. And a lot of shellfish do this as well. Mm. The mantle, basically its job is making and developing shells. Calcium carbonate is the primary ingredient in snail shells, and small amounts of protein as well go into making the shell. So in order to build them, the mantle creates an electric current that helps the organism push calcium ions into place. Before hatching, a baby snail grows a protoconch, the first component of its shell. Once our little snail leaves the egg, healthy eating becomes a priority. The mantle will require additional calcium to strengthen and expand the shell. Instinct compels the newborn shell to devour what's left of the calcium-rich egg that they've just hatched from.
That's fair.
And then they just eat. snails of all ages and sizes need to keep eating foods that are rich in calcium. So this is why your garden gets demolished by snails and slugs, you know, especially with like calcium rich vegetables like spinach or broccoli.
Yeah.
And then they also can swallow soil that's calcium rich and or gnaw on some limestone, which sounds difficult.
How do they know that there's calcium in it?
I think it's just the way that they can sense it with their, like, they can probably either taste it or smell it. That I'm not sure 100%, but I know that like they're instinctively able to tell.
That's cool.
Yeah. So the protoconch comes with a small opening or mouth, and the mantle adds new layers of the calcium carbonate and proteins from the mouth below. As the new material hardens, the shell grows, spiraling in coils around the protoconch, which again is what they're born with, right? Will gradually spin around and become the apex or the uppermost tip of the snail's widening shell. Depending on the species, the protoconch will either remain there permanently or break off. So, unlike nautilus shells, snail shells will always coil to the left or the right. So some snails are righties and some snails are lefties. Most of them are righties, but there are some lefty snails.
Interesting.
Similar to humans.
Yes. Yes, I also grow my protoconch to the right.
I grow mine to the left, so I'm like super rare.
You are super rare.
Weird thing, at my work, there's like 5 of us that are all left-handed, which is like statistically very improbable.
That's incredible.
I know. It's pretty cool. I think it might be like a nurse thing. I don't know. Maybe our brain is just like wired that way. I don't know.
I was trying to think. I think the only person I know that's left-handed is Papa, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Puma's about to jump up. I apologize if you hear her go.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Very good.
Oh my gosh. Here we go. All right. So let's see. If you were to cut open a snail shell. You'd notice several main layers in the cross section. At the surface, there is a periostracum, a thin outer layer usually made with organic material. Below that, you've got a layer of hard calcium sitting atop a blanket of nacre, which is a resilient composite material better known as mother of pearl.
Ooh, fancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that shiny stuff that you see on jewelry is very much this.
Oh, don't you worry. I watch enough JTV.
That's right. That's right. The protoconch comes with a small opening. Oh, wait. I just did this.
Why
is this like this?
You did. Oh. Well, I don't know.
I did this to myself. I'm sorry.
Do you know? She doesn't know.
All right. Obviously, I'm not good at editing my documents here, but it's fine. We're going to move right along into the ecosystem function of a snail. Mm-hmm. So shelled land snails, I had to say that slow, as opposed to slugs, are important in calcium cycling. They glean calcium from their food, concentrate it in their shells that are made mainly of calcium, and pass it up the food chain as well as they are consumed by predators. So both shelled snails and slugs can generally be categorized as decomposers, as we talked about earlier.
I'm so sorry.
I was really like out here trying to destroy the pod.
I'm so sorry.
This is what my cats do. Why are your cats acting up today?
You know what's going on? I think Jinx and Salem have been bad influences on his babies.
That's fair.
She literally just showed you her butthole.
It's a sorry nice butthole.
I mean, to be fair.
All right. So land snails do not move far over their lifetime, so they can be excellent indicators of site history and site conditions. Because shelled land snails have high calcium demand, they are sensitive to calcium availability due to soils and plants. Site moisture and past land clearing of fire also strongly influence snail populations. Land snails have been used extensively in European archaeology to interpret environments in the distant past. And they can also be indicators of pollution as they uptake environmental toxins such as cadmium. Human use of land snails as food ranges from Native American consumption of Oreohelix species snails in the Western states to find dining upon Helix species snails served as escargot in restaurants. Medical uses include the production of anti-agglutinin from the albumin glands of Helix asperza, which is a snail type.
Nice.
Land snails also have negative interactions with other organisms. Snails are intermediate hosts to a variety of mammalian parasites.
Nice.
As we talked about a little bit earlier as well. The cervid brain worm, I'm not going to pronounce that.
That is huge. Oh my God.
Is carried by deer and can severely limit moose and caribou populations.
Bro.
I'm so sorry. But the most serious ecosystem and agricultural impacts due to land snails are often related to non-native pest populations. For example, the introduced European white garden snail that can be damaged or that can damage ornamental and citrus plants that have been subject to eradication programs in California. And virtually every Pennsylvania gardener knows the problems that are introduced with arachnid slugs.
Nice.
So keep an eye out for those.
We have slugs here and they are big.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah. I've seen yellow. Mostly snails here.
Yeah.
And I think they're cute. They're not really, I only have like a few succulents and they chomp on them, but it's all right.
It's
I don't mind.
It's fine.
Yeah. Further importation of non-native land snails as pets or as biological control agents has the potential to create major agricultural and ecosystem impacts. The giant African snail is one popular pet, which, although is illegal to import to the United States, is being sold by poorly regulated, ignorant, or unscrupulous dealers.
Unscrupulous.
And then released to the wild by unknowing owners. So
that's great.
Keep an eye out for the giant African snail.
Oh my God. I can say for certain, I think the one that we have, I had to look it up. I think the one we have is an Aryan slug.
Mm.
They're so big. And they're, ironically, they are in fact going to and from our like little planter garden in the front of the house. So this makes perfect sense. Do we have any plants there right now? No.
No.
But they are there.
Well, this also might mean that maybe your soil has a lot of calcium in it.
Actually, it does, because whoever made these houses, before they decided to make the planter, they put giant boulders in the bottom. So if you try to dig down into the planter, you hit rock within like 2 inches of soil.
It's so good for like irrigation, I guess.
Sure. If you can even get the plant in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's blank. But I will assume that's why they're there, because there are tons of rocks underneath there that are probably very calcium rich.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Sure. Right? Yeah.
All right. That's all I got for the first half. We'll see you guys after the break. We spend a lot of time joking about our mediocrity and how we can't believe people actually listen to our pods and join our lives.
Despite that, the truth is we are so thankful to have our little community, and we want to send our special thanks to all you MCP fam members for continuing to stick with us every episode. It does not go unnoticed.
It might be cheesy and a little cliche, but we truly want to thank you for listening to our pods and engaging with our content as we slowly grow our platforms.
So from us over here at Mediocre Content Podcast,
thank you. Now enough of this mushy stuff. Let's get back to the pod. Carnivorous snails.
Just dive right in.
Welcome back. I know you guys were all anxiously awaiting to know about these.
What I'm disappointed in, is that they have yet to make a movie about carnivorous snails.
Dun, 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 dun.
For real.
Dun, 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 dun. And you see this like, but like the snail teeth.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you can make Sharknado, I feel like we're not expanding very rapidly here.
Well, the problem is that snails' mouths are really small. And also, they move really slow. So it would be like a zombie movie, but with snails.
I could get down with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd be cool with that.
And then you see like the influencer being like, I need my snail mucin or whatever. And then she like dies.
I forgot that they call it slugging for a reason.
Uh-huh.
So gross. Yeah, anyway,
it's not good.
We're anyway, not getting into that.
No hate to anyone who uses that on their face. I'm sure it's great, but I don't. All right. Carnivorous snails. European carnivorous snails. Oh, this, by the way, this article that I found, I couldn't find anything on like American carnivorous snails. Oh. So most of these are from an article that was researched for European purposes.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's fine. That,
it was very difficult to find information on this.
Weird.
So European carnivorous snails mainly eat earthworms, insect larvae, and other snails or their eggs. European predatory snails, for example, are the scientific name that I can't pronounce, and another scientific name that I can't pronounce.
The second one is kind of sus.
AKA called, AKA, they are the shelled slugs.
Great.
Now, usually almost unknown outside of scientific circles, since they live subterraneously, so underground.
Mm-hmm.
In Great Britain, another species has only been discovered in 2006 and also begins or belongs to a group of otherwise not present in Europe. The unscientific name that I can't pronounce, AKA snails with big teeth.
They have
so
teeth?
We have, yes.
Oh, that, they have, that makes sense.
Yes, Kirsten, they have teeth.
Those are carnivores.
Right. All right.
It's fine.
We're just taking it right back to regular biology here.
Take me back.
Typically, things that eat other things have teeth to help them digest those things.
I assume they just slurp it up like spaghetti, okay?
I mean, sure.
Some animals do that, you know.
You know. It's true. Snakes are a great example of this.
Yeah, I mean, they have fangs, but fangs don't count as teeth, right? I guess we got
to
do an
I'm
episode
about
snakes.
I'm not about to have a teeth versus fangs debate with you because I really don't know.
Don't you worry. I'll put it all on the list.
Oh, good. Dracula has fangs and teeth. So does that mean I don't...
Oh, you know what, too? Also, very just thinking, we did the Bigfoot episode. We need to go back to cryptids at some point. So maybe we could talk about it then.
Okay. All right. That sounds
Vampire
good.
Vampire episode.
We also haven't done werewolves.
No, we haven't.
No. Mm-mm. Okay. Jacob and Edward.
No.
Jacob versus Edward.
No.
Yes. You know you like the Twilight books. Don't
I
even get me started.
I loved the books. I hated the debate.
What do you mean the debate?
The debate. Jacob versus Edward. Like you just said. Yeah.
Oh.
Loved the books. Hated the debate.
Which
be
did you like better?
Both.
You don't care? Oh, you like both. Okay.
Which one did you like?
I can get on board with that. I like Jacob better.
This does not surprise me.
Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. No, all right.
I can't do this, Blair. My throat. God.
Okay. So we have the shelled slugs and the tail. The snails with big teeth. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You got it.
I can't.
It's fine.
All right. So. So there's the Radula tooth snails, the Welsh ghost snail, and there's the single Radula tooth snails as well, I guess. Okay. That's kind of breaks it down. There's a lot of scientific words in here. I feel like I'm not going to bore you guys with that information.
Mm-mm.
And I can't pronounce it anyway. So like, really, what's the point?
It's fair.
So the snails' radula teeth are long and sharp, and they are used to grab the prey, usually earthworms, and pull it into their mouth. So, and even the worm is like resisting, but the teeth like have it in their grasp.
Yeah, I feel like I would also be resisting if I were the worm.
Yeah. While the predatory snails mentioned so far are so-called semi-slugs, which basically means that they are they're considered semi slugs because this the shell is so small.
Mm.
Because the movability without the shell is better. So they can like reach out and grab things more easily without a large shell.
But because they are shelled slugs or shelled snails, sorry, they have to have one or they die.
Right. So it is attached, but it's just small.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. There are also complete slugs that also eat other snails. So there are carnivorous slugs as well.
Lovely.
And those carnivorous slugs I'm going to list now are called the leopard slug, worm slug, and that's it.
Ugh.
Just those. And the leopard slug looks kind of weird because it has a bunch of spots on it. It looks
like you
it's yucky
think that it would in snail form or slug's form, I guess.
The tiny glass snails have developed an interesting hunting method. They are less susceptible to cold than other snails, which means that they only have to wait until the others start to hibernate to start feeding on them. So all of the snails go to sleep in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tiny glass snail comes along and just eats it while it's asleep, which is honestly kind of a cheap shot.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I was trying to figure out what it looked like, and I typed in tiny glass snail, but it's just people who have made snails out of glass. And now I'm sad.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And the tiny glass snail is in fact tiny, only being a few centimeters in size.
Oh, that's cute.
Another interesting hunting technique that's been adopted by the Dalmatian predator snail, which can be found in the Adriatic coast in northeastern Italy. So that they have also done the like eating while the snails are hibernating. Sorry. Mm. That was awkward. Anyway, the preferred prey of those predator snails are round mouth snails of the genus Pomatius.
Okay.
Since this kind of snail has a shell lid to protect the aperture of its shell, mm-hmm. the predator cannot enter the shell there to eat the inhabitant. Instead, it has developed an acid gland in its foot, which then secretes mucus enriched with carbon dioxide and acid, using this acid secretion, the predator dissolves the prey's shell wall and eats the snail.
I forgot that their tail is. They have feet.
Uh-huh.
I remember learning about this vaguely, but maybe it's something mm-hmm. I've repressed because I don't like thinking about snail feet.
Yeah, well, I think the bottom mm-hmm. of their mm-hmm. body is their mm-hmm. foot.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Mm.
All right.
Gross.
Despite its flowery name, the rosy wolf snail is not a peaceful creature. Its lips are elongated to form a third pair of tentacles.
Ugh.
So it can better track and follow its prey, which is usually smaller land snails. And it tracks it along their slime thread.
It's so gross looking.
Oh
my God.
When hunting its prey, the rosy wolf snail will not stop from crossing water and climbing trees. Larger snails are eaten piecemeal. Smaller ones are eaten whole, shell included.
Okay, so just so everyone's clear.
I'm ready.
The rosy wolf snail is also known colloquially as the cannibal snail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How fun.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
On the islands of French Polynesia, the wolf snail has been introduced to deal with the African land snails, which have escaped from human farms.
They escaped so fast, I couldn't even stop them. I don't know how it happened.
I can't. that.
They just started running.
The wolf snail, however, tends to hunt smaller tree snails than the giant African snails, which led to the extinction of several small endemic snail species.
Oops.
Another non-European carnivorous snail species is the lancetooth snail. The robust lancetooth is found in the northeastern United States and Canada, British Columbia, and mainly hunts smaller slug species. Those, on the contrary, have developed an interesting method to evade an attacker. They get out of harm's way by flapping their tail and winding their bodies until they jump out of the predator's reach. Sorry. This is why those slugs are also called jumping slugs.
These are cuter than the other two.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Yeah.
It's redeemed itself.
Thank you for the update.
You're welcome. I needed that.
The play-by-play.
Oh my god.
All right. On the other hand, from Eastern and Southeastern South Africa, the Natalina caffra, which is also known as a cannibal snail, can well reach into its prey's body. The shell's final whorl is also quite wide so that the predator can eat smaller snails in whole. Contrary to the rosy wolf snail.
Oh, the cat butt.
Natalina caffra has no problems attacking giant African land snails. And also is notably larger than the slender wolf snail, its shell growing to a width of 2.8 inches and a height of 2 inches.
So this one is massive.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big snail. Also, did you, I forget, the snail shell differences that it's pointing out in terms of size?
Mm-hmm.
It has to do, actually, it looks like, with shape, because the rosy wolf snail looks like more like a cone, like you would find mm-hmm. on the beach,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But like the common one is like what you would expect to see a snail look like, except huge.
Yeah.
And gross.
So that one's just bigger, I guess.
Right. It's just physically bigger. But the rosy wolf snail shell
looks spiky.
It looks like a seashell that you would
like
find.
Like a conch.
Like a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
All right, last one. In New Zealand. Hold on. Cat's in the way. In New Zealand, there are other Ratidae snails. The large howl phanta snails are nocturnal and mainly hunt for earthworms and slugs, which they grab with their radicula, which are the teeth, then pull them into their mouth to be digested. On the other hand, many snails in that genus in New Zealand are also endangered because they are preyed upon mostly by introduced marsupials and mammals. Also, the destruction of their habitats is a problem. So.
Okay, final update then. These snails are, like, they have a really pretty shell, and they're actually black is what it looks like. Like, their body is black.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of iridescent almost in some of these pictures. It could just be because they're wet. However, if you search the Powelophanta word for this snail, you can see a YouTube video of rare giant snail feasts on earthworm, and the thumbnail photo is horrifying. Feel free to explore that yourself.
Great. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so we'll just do a few snail facts and frequently asked questions, and we'll wrap it up. Cool. So the biggest question, which I think we already know, do snails have teeth?
Unfortunately.
Yes, they do, and they have a lot of them. They have about 12,000 teeth on average, and they are called radula teeth.
Gross.
Yep. How long do snails sleep? Well, snails do sleep, but they do so quite differently from humans. Typical snails sleep for 2 to 4 days.
Hmm.
And then sometimes snails have slept for years, depending on the species and environment. After that, a snail can stay awake for longer than a full day. Snails are nocturnal, which means they typically come out at night, just like moths.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And when it's raining, also that.
Yes, like earthworms.
Just like earthworms.
How convenient that your food is also out.
Is a snail an insect? No, they are not. Yeah. They do have the antennae on their face, mm-hmm. but they are not an insect. They are mollusks. Mollusks. Okay, so the difference between snails and slugs, we know this already.
Yeah.
They are very similar. However, snails have shells, slugs do not, but they are in the same family of mollusks. How fast do snails move? Not known. but they typically they move of a pace of over three feet or a meter in 1 hour.
That's, you know, I really don't know how they just ran out of there, you know. It's becoming less and less obvious how that happened.
And for those of our younger listeners, what does snail mail mean?
That's so good.
And I will tell you, it is not sure where the term came from necessarily, but as email rose mm-hmm. as a popular form of communication and texting after that, a term was needed to distinguish electronic mail from physical mail, and thus snail mail was coined.
Right. Because you get 3 to 5 business days versus instantaneous.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So snail mail is much slower and sometimes more irritating to deal with, but it is the classic form of mail that is provided by the United States Postal Service.
It is. Thank you, USPS.
Mm-hmm. This episode was sponsored by the United States. Oh, just kidding.
Can you imagine?
Just kidding.
What a sponsorship that would be. Do we get free stamps for the rest of our life? Because that'd be great.
That would be great.
Oh, my
All right.
God. Well.
So, Kirsten, let's wrap it up.
Oh, my God. I don't necessarily mind snails or slugs, but I have to say it's never something where I like look down and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am so excited to see a snail or a slug. But maybe some of you are snail and or slug stans, and we want to know which one, both, why? Are you doing a research on it? Are you doing some studies on it? Do you just like having them in your garden? Or do you hate them because they're in your garden? Please tell us all of those things at mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com, or connect with us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, same handle, you know. And actually, find us on Twitch every other Thursday, 3 p.m. PST, 6 p.m. EST, 11 p.m. BST. Those are not different times. They are all one time. So pick the one that makes the most sense to you, and we'll see you there. Give us 5 stars. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
5 stars. This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.